1961. Smoke gets in your eyes. The chemistry laboratory was separated from the classroom, the gallery classroom, with its tiers of seats, by a corridor some 4 feet wide. This was very fortunate for us pupils. It was less fortunate though for the then janitor of our school, and the teacher to whom we were all trying to pay attention. There we were exposed to the elements. Well, a certain part of one of us was, to the O squared H degree N to the power of one of the room. This particularly unlucky individual was carrying out a personal experiment of his own, under the apparent safety of the desktop. He was impersonating a jackhammer operator at the time, and he was ordered to leave the room with his trouser fly buttons undone. Much to his embarrassment, he was ordered to stand in the corridor outside for the duration of the ensuing lesson. He was the only one who saw what happened next. Previous to this little episode of personal gratification, we pupils were assembled in this magnificent modern chemistry laboratory, which was equipped with all the very latest technology, and fitted with superb long mahogany-topped benches, with sinks and water supplies. Dotted around the benches were these pairs of cast-iron three-legged trivets, under which were placed metal tubes. Attached to said tubes were pink rubber hoses connected to taps, gas taps, pairs of gas taps, back to back. Mr. Bunsen, famous then, and whose name is now probably known by every school child today, invented this particular tube-shaped device to combine coal gas, or town gas, as it later became to be known, and the components of everyday, ordinary, run-of-the-mill air. This chemical combination process was enhanced with the aid of the use of a combustion process initiated with the aid of a lighted wooden splint to produce the following results. Combine some of the elements of the ancient carboniferous compound from which the gas was extracted, and the chemical elements present in our atmosphere, and the following items will be produced: visible light emissions, low frequency radiation in the form of heat, carbon monoxide and dioxide gases, together with a very minute quantity of the native product, carbon, or lamp black as it came to be commonly called in the 19th century. The master of our class had elements of safety practices on his agenda that particular day as well, and as a result, we pupils were shown how to avoid contact with this very hot flame being produced by Mr. Bunsen's burner. Close off the air mixture control valve to ensure a tall visible yellow flame when you have finished heating your chemicals, was the advice given to us naive pupils. Sound advice you might think. Nice big easily visible yellow flame, much cooler as well, no danger now to our soft sensitive little bodies, job done. Well, there you have it then, got to it at last. The job was far from being done, the lab ceiling was being done. That's what was being done that day. Well, whitened again, in the evening of course, while we were at home, some clever person, who shall remain nameless, left all the Bunsen burners on flat out with a nice bright yellow flame. And what does this flame produce a lot of in those conditions, you ask? Soot, or lamp black, you takes your pick, as Michael Miles used to say. Another black day at the Bath Tech. For boys. Heavy metal. Lesson 1, I am introduced to a bending machine and a piece of tin 4x3 or thereabouts. I am asked by the teacher to make lines on this tin, and to cut off the four corners at 45 degrees. Then the metal is to be placed under the machine and hey presto, it is now folded in on one edge. This is repeated for the other edges. I present this sad-looking piece of rectangular metal to the teacher for inspection, whereupon I am informed that I may place marks on the metal using metal letter punches. Letters which form my initials and surname. Proud as punch, I now head off to the pillar drill with the intention of piercing a hole in aforementioned tin. The tin at this point refuses to lie still and be killed quietly. It and the drill bit embrace each other and proceed to remove large quantities of skin from the appendages which previously were my hands. A large and heavy red-hot soldering iron and I are brought together in a pot of flux, and I am slowing understanding the process of heat conduction and metal flow all in one go. I have soldered myself to the iron and the stiff copper metal at the same time. After using up all the available solder to make this copper ring, some 1.25 millimeters in diameter, which by now is very hot. It is now firmly fitted through the previously mentioned hole in the tin. The ring is going to be used to thread some suitable flexible material through, in due course. Eventually, I triumph, sanity and normality is restored again. I am presented by the teacher with a piece of steel wire to thread through the copper ring. I am an engineering technician now. I have made my nameplate to attach to my future work. Lesson 2: with all things metal, there is a need to make a mark on them with a device called a scribe. This singularly painful torture is imposed on the metal as a necessity because of its unnerving natural ability to change size and/or shape at will. I guarantee you that as soon as you cut into it with a hacksaw, it will become 10% smaller than when you measured it last. Where are we? Oh, I remember. The thing that all aspiring engineering technicians need next in their toolkit is the straight edge. This starts off life as a regular shaped piece of steel and ends up as a wavy edged piece of metal resembling a comb with no teeth. That is how mine ended up anyway. The only good-looking thing about it was the pretty pattern of overlapping circles that we were shown how to apply with the aid of the trusty pillar drill, and the engineer's nightmare product, emery paper wrapped round the end of a stick. Apply a little oil, voil, there you have it, a fully featured toolkit in two easy lessons. Lesson 3: I am not a keen gardener, I count myself in the majority here. But I am forced by this man to roll a small rectangular piece of metal through what can only be described as a very large mangle. This beast is a mean machine and requires the attention of no less than two pupils, yes, two pupils, to make it perform. Slowly we turn this knob on the top, which much to our dismay only makes the machine more difficult to use. After we have attached four pupils to the handle, we eventually get the machine to submit, and it spits out our piece of metal in a super cool curve that any Jaguar owner would die for as part of the bodywork on his car just above the front headlights. In this pristine curve of metal, we are now forced by the master to return to the mincing machine, the pillar drill, and made to attempt keyhole surgery with the intent of riveting another piece of metal which has undergone an equally torturous sequence of treatment in the smithy's forge. Bit like being cremated, but you come back out in one piece, but a different color. This other part is alien to the first piece, because unlike the gentle bending, it has had seven bells knocked out of it on an anvil and has been forced to take on the shape of Concord. What part does this piece play, you ask? Well, it is for the handle that you made in woodwork the week before. If you got it right, you have a trowel. If not, then you had a super silent rattle to take to football matches. Lesson 4: you know those gardeners who grow vegetables in nice looking super straight? I have just ironed this one, Rose. Where on earth do you suppose they get the tool to do the job? Off the railway bank near Stewart Place, that's where. Well, Ian, not being generous to anyone, my guess is that you forgot about this simply because you were too scared to take it home, were you not? I wanted to put warranty you, but word keeps putting those stupid red lines underneath words that we understand, but it doesn't see, it's done its own thing again. Back to the plot. I want sorry, will not bore you stupid for much longer. Suffice to say that much metal has suffered so long for so few finished products. We have tamed the wobbly garden with our mobile pointy letter H and I with rings on top, to show the world we mean business. Use browser back button to return to previous page, to 1962. Smoke gets in your eyes. Chemistry lessons were never the same after this little episode at Brigham Hayes, Oldfield Park branch. School tie. This picture of one version of our old school tie was sent in by an ex-pupil to the website in 2010. My tie was a very basic black background with yellow stripes. Our cap badge was the same as the badge on this tie. We were allowed to stop wearing caps in 1961. I can remember us after assembly rushing out into the school playground and throwing them up in the air. Some ended up on the railway line, many more in the river. Don't know if mine even made it home or not. Cap badge. This was sent in by an ex-pupil from Bristol. Apart from the ink marks, it seems to have survived the passage of time remarkably well. Television set. Ferguson 17 television. This was the make and style of television we had when I went to Bath Technical School. We had it on the back room table. It was quite high up to look at. I was told by the school doctor to watch TV lying on my stomach and look up. This was to help correct a bend in my spine. I don't think he realized that our TV was on a table. I tried it for a while, it nearly broke my neck in half. Heavy metal. I remember all this stuff about metal work classes in the old jail at Stewart Place, Twerton. It was placed on the City of Bath Technical School website that I administer, along with a few other old pupils from school, in 2002. Stewart Place. The above photographs show Stewart Place, looking north, from the railway line, and the bottom one, looking due east, toward Broom Hayes Bridge and the old school buildings.